It is your Thursday Daily Delivery. I'm Michael Rand. Happy to be back for another day and hope you guys are as well. Had a great conversation with Tony Kennedy, outdoors writer for the Star Tribune. One of the funnest segments I can remember recording in quite some time. He has compiled, with the help of colleagues, a Big Ten deer hunting power rankings. Those are three separate phrases that don't always go together. Big Ten power rankings, sure. Big Ten deer hunting power rankings. Throw that in the middle, and that is unusual. But a concept cooked up by Tony and colleagues, you know, Bob Timmons, other folks at the Star Tribune, that will be coming out in print and online very soon. But we talked about that for today's podcast, the methodology, where Minnesota ranks among its Big Ten peers in deer hunting, and things like that. I really had fun talking to Tony about that. I'm not a deer hunter, but I really enjoyed kind of getting into the nitty-gritty of what makes a state a good deer hunting state and some of just the uniqueness of the approach and coming up with that idea that the Star Tribune had. So hope you enjoy that here in just a little bit. Later in the show, Stefon Diggs has reached the end of the road again. Traded from Buffalo to Houston on Wednesday. I'll have some thoughts on that at the end of the show. A very familiar ending for Stefon Diggs after 4 years ago he was traded from the Vikings to the Bills. First, though, what I miss, a little bit game-heavy again. The Wolves had back-to-backs. The Gopher women's basketball team advanced in the WNIT, got to the championship game of that. Starting with the Twins, though. Had some small sample size concerns on yesterday's show, talking about how they hadn't hit a home run since Royce Lewis homered in the first inning of the first game of the year. Then Royce Lewis, of course, injured after just three innings this season and is out for at least a month. We're guessing maybe closer to 2 months before he comes back from that severe strained muscle in his calf. So no home runs. They're sitting there. They're trailing the Brewers 3-1 in the seventh inning. The bats are quiet again. Can't blame the weather. You know, they're in the climate control of the Brewers ballpark. So they start to put together a rally. Buxton has a big hit. Correa has a big hit. They get the game tied up. You get Jeffers to plate. I wasn't watching Ryan Jeffers at the plate. I wasn't watching on TV. Still do not have Bally Sports North to watch the Twins right now. Wrestling with what to do for this season. Thought maybe I'd have the option of streaming, but I do not. So trying to figure that out. Do I need to make a change right now? Things like that. Not watching on TV, following along on the GameCast while I'm finishing up work. And I see Jeffers having a really good at-bat, right? It's like he's still up there. It's like 2-2. Still 2-2. Fouling off pitches. Seventh pitch. Gets one he likes. Hits it just over the wall in left field. Biggest hit of the year for the Twins. And Jeffers even said that after the game. A lot of guys for the Twins said that after the game. Said it felt important to win this game. After winning their first two in Kansas City, then getting routed in the series finale against the Royals, losing the first one against the Brewers. You don't want to come home 2-3 with three straight losses going into today's home opener against Cleveland. You just don't want that kind of baggage carried into Target Field. So that five-run rally, three-run homer from Jeffers, capping a five-run rally. So that's, you know, that makes them feel better. Again, early season, small sample sizes. It's not like this was going to be the end of the world if they didn't rally, if they didn't hit a home run. But you feel better about things even just from one swing of the bat. That's the way baseball goes. One swing of the bat suddenly has you feeling better about, you know, an inning, about a game, about a team. 3-2 coming home now to the opener of the Target Field season today, 3:00 against Cleveland. Looks like the weather should be pretty good for that. Looks like upper 40s, maybe hitting 50, nice and sunny. You know, it's not hot, but that is pleasant April baseball. I've been in a lot worse as a Twins watcher for several years at Target Field, so you'll want to check that one out if you get the chance. One concern I still have, and it's early. I get that a lot of teams are kind of in this same boat where they're not extending their pitchers that much. Another short start. Chris Paddock goes four innings. After the game, Rocco Baldelli praised the bullpen, but also said this about Chris Paddock.
With how much he had to, with how he had to work to get through those four innings, I think he was close to spent at that point. Regardless of what he says, that's what I was seeing with my eyes, and I think it was time to get him out. There will be other games where he goes, certainly goes back out, keeps pitching, goes and hopefully pitches the fifth and finishes it for us. But with the effort that it took to get through those first four innings going to our bullpen, I thought was the right move.
Now, Paddock's four innings were relatively effective, right? He only gave up two runs, but he needed a lot of pitches. 82 pitches. It sounded like from Rocco's comments and from talking to Bobby Nightingale and Phil Miller from our staff earlier this year, sounds like, Paddock's going to kind of be a five-inning guy this year. Back of the rotation, still easing him back. Not so much like a hard cap on his innings, but they want to be careful after, even the second year back, 2 years back from Tommy John surgery, want to make sure that he is going to stay healthy. So that tells me you don't quite know what you're going to get from Louis Varland this year. He had a short start the other day, just four innings, needed 89 pitches to get through those innings. The Bailey Ober start was the kind of anomaly, right? Like, usually you can count on Bailey Ober to give you innings. He had just that clunker in his opening start, the rout against the Royals. I'm just having a hard time seeing where the starters' innings are going to come from this year. Last year, like I said on Wednesday's show, Twins were fourth in the majors in starters' innings. That's a big stat. That means you're not overtaxing your bullpen. What we saw in 2022 is that even though the Twins starters were okay in terms of team ERA, they were fourth from the bottom that year in starters' innings pitched. Over 100 fewer innings pitched from starters in 2022 versus 2023. And now, of course, don't have Sonny Gray, don't have Kenta Maeda, not having the same kind of rotation depth. I'm still wondering how that plays out. Early in the year, right now, doesn't matter as much. They had a lot of off days, right? They had the off day built into their first series. They had an off day between their first and second series. They have an off day Friday because they're kind of, worried about weather early in the year in these kind of colder weather, rainier outdoor stadiums. After tomorrow, they play 12 straight days. They're scheduled to play 12 straight games, the 6th through the 17th. Each of those a game day, going through the rotation at least a couple times, more than a couple times for the last couple games. Can they get more innings? Can the bullpen hold up? Will they have to go to reinforcements already from AAA? Those are questions I have. I'm not so worried about innings right in this moment. I'm worried about what happens when you don't have these off days if you're not getting the innings from starters. So that's something for you to watch and for me to watch in these next couple of weeks. The Wolves routed the Raptors. It was over almost before it started. Final score, I believe, 133-85. Nice that they could take out almost, basically all the starters by early in the fourth quarter. Didn't have to overtax anybody. It was the second night of a back-to-back at home. So nice to be able to do that. Big one Friday against Phoenix, trying to keep pace in the West. Speaking of that, the Wolves now tied atop the West with Denver, and they technically do own the tiebreaker. So they are technically back in first place in the West. Now, doesn't mean a ton to me if they win that. We've talked about that before. The teams at the bottom are so good. Lakers, Warriors, like someone in that 9-10 game is going to come out and be in the playoffs. And you're going to have, nobody's going to be worse than like a 46 or 47 win team in the playoffs this year. It's very stacked in the West. So it's not so much a matter of trying to like match up or find your opponent. It's more about, can you be playing your best at the end of the year? But, would be nice to have home court throughout the playoffs. It could pay off in future rounds if you are able to get through that first round, which will be a tough series no matter what. But, all those teams like 10 through 6, 10 through 5 are so bunched up. I'm not so worried about if they fall to second or third. I'm worried more about, can they be playing their best? One of those things that I was concerned about was how poorly Anthony Edwards had been shooting the ball from deep lately. 0-for-19 in his previous three games from three-point range. Well, of course, small sample size being what they are, goes 5-for-12, over 40%, makes 5 on Wednesday, breaks out of that slump, has a big game, Wolves win going away. When he's hot, they are a different team, of course. They're still a good team, even when the ball's not going through the net on three-point shots, but when he is making his shots, they are altogether different. So they get that win. Now they got some tough ones. They've still got to play Denver one more time in a game that very, very likely will determine who ultimately has that home court in the West. That'll be a fascinating matchup. The one against Phoenix is big, though, on Friday. Got to keep pace, got to stay ahead. Oklahoma City fell off that pace yesterday. They lost it in a rout to Boston. That was kind of one you had circled on your calendar, like, hey, is that a game where Oklahoma City is going to lose ground? And indeed it was. So there the Wolves pick up ground, and we'll see where that gets them the rest of the year. One more game to get to before we talk to Tony Kennedy. Gopher women advance to the WNIT championship game. Now, important to remember the distinction. The WNIT is the third tier women's tournament. Now, it's not the second tier tournament right below the NCAA tournament. It is the third tier tournament. It used to be that the WNIT was the second best. Like, if you just barely missed the NCAA tournament, you got in the WNIT. Now, it is the third tournament. That said, nothing wrong with playing this deep into the year, getting confidence, getting some of their younger players some more confidence. Maya Battle, another big game in this win over Troy on Wednesday. So now they are in the championship game. That championship game Saturday at 2 p.m. against St. Louis. Unsure yet where the game will be. That's interesting, reading that from the Star Tribune story. Location to be determined, but the game will be televised, CBS Sports Network. 2 p.m. Saturday, Gophers against St. Louis for the WNIT championship. And again, not, you know, they're not facing the top of the top teams right now, but getting back into play right now, getting themselves confident, that is a big deal for them. Maybe that will carry over into next season.
Twin Cities PBS invites you to watch The Electric Indian, a new documentary about Minnesota hockey legend Henry Boucher, a standout hockey star from Warroad, Minnesota, who made it all the way to the 1972 Olympics. Watch The Electric Indian on the PBS app or at tpt.org.
Good to be joined today by Tony Kennedy from the Star Tribune, writes about the outdoors and does a great job. Great job with that. Tony, how are you?
I'm good, Michael. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much for asking. And this came up a couple weeks ago. I think it was one of our planning meetings, and Bob Timmons, our coworker, your fellow outdoors writer, enthusiast, was mentioning this the Big Ten deer hunting power rankings, and it combines a lot of things that intrigue me. Those are not things you generally hear. All of those things going together. Explain to me what this project is, which comes out, I believe, in print and online very soon after this podcast comes out.
That's right. Yeah. It was just a fun idea by our outdoor staff, you know, we always read NFL and college football power rankings. I mean, they come out once a week, everybody does one. And we thought it'd be fun to do a power rankings of deer hunting in the Big Ten states.
So that encompasses basically all there's 11 states that have Big Ten schools as of 2024. Is that correct?
Correct. 11 states, 14 schools.
So we'll get into expansion in a little while, but first I want to know, what's the methodology here? How are we ranking? How are we determining power rankings here?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it started out as a fun idea, and we thought we'd look at how many deer hunters every state has and how many deer they harvest and kind of leave it at that. But then we found a great resource through the National Deer Association. They do a very comprehensive report every year on the deer harvest nationwide. And they do comprehensive listings state by state in, gosh, I want to say about 20 different metrics, you know?
Okay.
So then that was too many to
deep deer hunting analytics right here.
Yeah,
I like it.
Exactly.
I love
who
it.
Knew?
Yeah. I didn't know. Yeah.
I know. So we ended up choosing six categories.
Okay.
And they are total harvest.
Okay.
And then that's an easy one. Then to be fair to states, you know, these are 11 states, you know, differ wildly in population. So
of course,
let's do deer harvest per 100 deer hunters.
Okay.
And then let's do for success. Mm-hmm. They have the percent of hunters in each state who shot at least one deer. So that's a percentage rank. Then we have what we looked into this even more, and we wanted to reward the states in the Big Ten that have a lot of public land.
Okay.
Because states like Iowa and Texas, virtually no public land. So you have to be a landowner or a leaser, you have to pay money to hunt for deer in those states. And so we thought we reward states that have a lot of public land. So we have that as a category. And then we have, and this is another one that wasn't in the report, but Dennis Anderson came up with it. Let's mm-hmm. look at Boone and Crockett record keepers for the biggest, or the most trophy bucks.
Okay.
They're a national organization. They've been around since the 1800s, and they authenticate reports of trophy bucks that meet their criteria for what a trophy is. So we have that. And then we have let's reward states that have a lot of deer hunters, you know, like Minnesota has a ton of deer hunters. And let's normalize that by going deer hunters per your population.
Okay. Makes sense. Yeah.
Okay. So, and that, I think that was close to six categories there. And then we awarded points, and then to, for each line, we awarded points to each state, and then we totaled them up and ended up with a ranking.
So I guess the one thing it's impossible to know for certain is exactly how many deer are in each state. So it's hard to, I mean, you can kind of guess, right?
They do. Every state has an estimate, but like Minnesota has estimated, I think, a million for as long as I've been covering it. And
okay,
it's kind of static. I don't know if anybody, it's always a guess. It's always a guess. So we left that out.
If a deer crosses the border into Wisconsin, does it then count in Wisconsin? Do you have to kind of like track them? I'm just kidding. So was the idea of this just curiosity? Did you want to stir the pot a little bit, like get some friendly competition and rivalries going, or what's the goal here?
That was part of it. We wanted to see how Minnesota stacks up, you know, but it was also just fun we wanted to inform people, like, you know, when you're deer hunting and, you know, the day is done and you're at deer camp and people talk about other states and whether deer hunting is any good in other states and who's better at it.
Sure.
And Minnesotans tend to think they're pretty good. We're a good deer hunting state,
yes.
You know? But so that's kind of why we did it. And we started out as more of a fun thing, but it took on a little bit more serious tone, and not serious, but analytical.
Yeah. Analytical.
Yeah. Analytical.
So tell me, how did Minnesota fare compared to its peers? What are some of the rankings we can share with people?
Well, I'll do the total rankings first.
Okay. Do that. Yeah.
We got Michigan as number one deer hunting state in the Big Ten.
Very controversial. Okay. Very
controversial and surprising to me. I thought it would be Pennsylvania. Then we got Wisconsin and Wisconsin and Ohio tied at number two. We have Pennsylvania in third place, Minnesota and Iowa tie for fourth.
Okay.
Then we go in order, no ties, Indiana, Illinois, Maryland, Nebraska, and predictably New Jersey.
Not a lot of deer hunting in New Jersey. I would imagine when the new, you know, California schools and Washington come into the Big Ten next year in Oregon, I don't think there's a whole lot of, maybe I'm wrong. I don't imagine there's a ton of deer hunting out there, but maybe I'm wrong about that.
Yeah, I don't know. We're going to have to visit that next year and decide whether this might be the first and last power rankings, because I think they even hunt different, they have mule deer in those states, I think, and it could get kind of complicated.
Where, you know, so Minnesota comes in, you know, a little bit more than middle of the pack, where what, fourth place, you said, number four.
Yeah.
What brought their ranking up, and what were some of the things that caused Minnesota to maybe not be at the top?
Great question. So we have two categories that Minnesota really excels in. And number one is the amount of public land that we have in this state that's open for hunting. And we have actually, we are at number one in terms of, and it's about 8 million acres.
Wow.
That includes not just state land, but federally owned land, county land, school trust fund land. I mean, any kind of public land where you can hunt. And generally speaking in Minnesota, with few exceptions, if you have public land, you can hunt it, including the boundary waters. There's deer hunters in the boundary waters. So anyway, we came in with 8 million acres, which is about a million more than Michigan, which came in number two. But Michigan in our, again, we tried to normalize it for the size of the state, you know,
okay. So
by share of public land, and it was a percentage. So 16% of Minnesota land is public and you can hunt it. Okay. In Michigan, it's just a shade better. So they came in first in that category.
Yeah, we overall, came in okay.
Second. Yep. So the second category that Minnesota really shines in is the number of deer hunters that we have. It speaks to the culture here. We have a rich tradition of whitetail hunting. You know, over the last 10 years, we've averaged 475,000 hunters going out every season. So that's almost a 500,000.
Yeah.
And in that category, we normalize that one. So deer hunters per 1,000 population or per 1,000 residents of people age 10 or more, 10 being kind of the minimum that you can hunt at in most states. So Minnesota came in second there. And Wisconsin, which is kind of similarly structured, we both have a lot of hunters. They came in first in that category, and Michigan came in third.
Okay. Where did maybe Minnesota lag a little bit then?
It's interesting. I didn't think we were this bad, but so because we have a lot of hunters and our harvest is middling, right? I mean, our total harvest is middling. Our total harvest, and it's been dropping, this year in 20, these are based on 2022 season.
Okay. Got it.
Was 172,000 whitetails. So you take, basically it's a division, you know, what your total harvest is divided by your total number of hunters. And because we have so many hunters and kind of a middling number of harvest, okay, we ranked actually we were in last place.
In terms of like percentage of hunters who harvested a deer, is that kind of essentially what that is?
It gets close to a percentage of that. What we have for hunter success, and Minnesota didn't do well here either. It did kind of middling, but in terms of how many hunters shot at least one deer. So our percentage there is 32%.
Yeah.
Which is not very high. So no. we came in seventh place there.
Okay.
Our total harvest of 172,000 whitetails came in right in the middle at 5. So, but that last place finish there kind of dragged us down.
Yeah, sounds like it. What's everyone doing out? Why are they all going out if there's nothing to shoot at?
Well, I think in these last 5 years, even more people in Minnesota, especially up north, have really struggled to find deer. And that's a combination of factors, but we had some really tough winters there back to back to back. And we've got wolf predation and we've got loss of habitat to a loss of good winter habitat for places where the deer could be safe from wolves. So yeah, that I think dragged it down. But a surprising result.
How did Michigan get to number one then? Was it a lot of name, image, and likeness money up there, or is it something else?
Their hunter success was excellent. So they had one of every two hunters shot at least one deer.
Okay.
And some shot more than one deer. So that was number one in that category. They were also, like I said previously, they were number one in total amount of or percentage of public land.
Okay.
They also did well in, like Minnesota did, in the number of deer hunters that buy a license per how many residents they have. So that's where they did their damage. And they ranked, fairly high in some other categories. Total harvest, for instance, they came in behind Michigan or behind Pennsylvania, which is number one by a long shot. And Wisconsin is number two in total deer harvest. Michigan's number three, right behind Wisconsin, almost equal.
Okay.
Almost equal. And that kind of surprised me too. But yeah, that's where Michigan did its damage, I think.
So you said Michigan was surprising to you. Is that just reputationally? Is Michigan just not thought of as much of a deer hunting state as some of these other ones that maybe finished a little lower, or how did it surprise you?
Yeah, I think that that's probably provincial on my part, Michael, but we always look at Wisconsin as being because I always thought they were right behind Pennsylvania in total harvest, and they have a ton of hunters, and those are both, we gave credit to them. But Michigan, and like I said, it's probably provincial, but I figured them to be about fourth and us to be about fifth. But with these other categories, they did pretty well.
Couple more things for you, Tony Kennedy. This is great. I love these. I'm going to look at these for sure when these are out in written form, but love talking about this right now. What can Minnesota do to raise its status in the 2025? You're not going to do this every week, right? I'm assuming you're not going to do this every week. What can they do to get better in the 2025 version? And can you cook the books a little bit? Can you reverse engineer a better finish for Minnesota based on different methodology, things like that?
Well, we could have definitely.
Yeah, we don't want to do that though.
The mock drafts, they're not
mock draft.
We mocked up some, and Minnesota did worse in some of the categories
okay.
we wanted to include or we thought of including. And it did help when we normalized some of these categories. Like, we don't have, like, compared to Pennsylvania, we don't have as many hunters, but we came out better than them because they have huge populations, you know, with Pittsburgh and Pittsburgh and Philly and some of the other metropolitan areas. They have more people than we do.
Sure.
So they have more hunters, but on a, you know, per resident number of residents, we came out better. I don't know. I'll have to look at that. I thought this was fair. We had our data expert CJ Sinner,
yep,
worked really closely with us on this, and she kind of brought some sensibility to fairness that we didn't have. You know, just as kind of looking at it more just from as hunters and how many deer you kill and you know how many people you put out there in the field. We had one category that we shook off that I think we will include next time is the National Deer Association has a report on how many average days a hunter in each state spends field hunting.
Hmm.
We were going to give value to the states where people put a lot of time in.
Yeah.
You know, so, but we left that one out because we were at six categories and we thought, well,
yeah,
seven, well then eight, that's just too much for people to take down. But there were some other surprises, you know, in some of the smaller states, New Jersey, for instance. You think, oh, these guys, you know, they weren't even on the map. But New Jersey came in third place. They ranked third in an important category, and that is the share of land that is public for hunting.
Okay.
New Jersey surprisingly has 750,000 acres of public land that is huntable for deer, for waterfowl, and trapping, so forth. And they're pretty proud of that. When you go to the DNR website in New Jersey, they have a big map of all the public land areas. And considering it's the most densely populated state in the nation, they deserve a lot of credit for that. You know, they come in last in a lot of categories, like total harvest, of course. But they're surprisingly, say, Nebraska came in second to last in total harvest, which was a surprise to me. They only harvest 40,000 whitetails a year. New Jersey harvested 38,000.
Hmm.
So they're right there with them, you know. But in terms of deer hunters per population, last. In terms of, you know, trophy bucks, last.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Couple more things. I feel like Minnesotans like would just, if you didn't have all the data, if you didn't have all the data to kind of parse this fairly, would Minnesotans insist Minnesota was number one, or would they say, you know, Wisconsin's pretty good. Okay, we'll give it to Michigan, things like that. How do you think this would be bragging rights wise? How do you think this, which state do you think thinks itself to be number one?
I don't think most Minnesotans would consider themselves to be number one. I think we consider ourselves as a really strong deer hunting state, especially when it comes to culture.
Okay.
But we know we're behind Pennsylvania. We know we're behind Wisconsin when it comes to, you know, sheer numbers of deer that are killed. And also, you know, we know we're, a lot of us know that we're behind places like Ohio and Illinois, you think, are those really deer hunting states? Well, they both come in really high on number of trophy bucks. Illinois and Ohio have excellent deer hunting. They also have, you know, huge urban areas that kind of change their metrics a little bit. But that was kind of a fun thing to see. Minnesota did okay on trophy bucks, Michael. I mean, we came in kind of middling again. We came in sixth place, but right behind where were we? We came in with 327 registered trophy bucks in 2022, and that was good for sixth place. Who came in fifth? Gosh, hang on. Illinois. Okay, okay. So there you go. And close beating us was Ohio.
Okay.
So, you know, there's some education to be had, I guess, if you look at the table. Yeah. Have the whole table. We have the whole table in the story when it comes online.
Oh, that'll be good to look at, too. Yeah. Is there anything special to the timing of all this? Doesn't feel like it. Was it just the time you had to do it, or what's the occasion for this right now?
Well, you would enjoy this. We had to wait until after March Madness, right?
Yeah.
Or towards the end of it.
Yeah.
Just to get space in the sports section. But also, it makes sense because in January of every year, the National Deer Association makes its report.
Okay.
And it's based on the previous year.
Okay.
Because in a lot of these states, the deer hunting goes all the way through February.
Okay.
So we don't really have results yet from 2023. What we do have all the results from 2022. And they don't change too much year to year.
Okay. Got it. That makes sense. You had to get the data before you could use the data. That makes sense. Well, this is tons of fun. I had a lot of fun talking to you about it. I'm going to enjoy when this comes out. Tony Kennedy, a pleasure. I'm sure we'll talk to you again soon.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Michael. Really appreciate it.
Royal Credit Union's smart checking accounts offer no monthly fees and no minimum balance. Enjoy financial freedom when you open your Royal Credit Union smart checking account online at rcu.org/gochecking. Insured by NCUA.
Like I said at the beginning of the show, really enjoyed that conversation with Tony Kennedy. Hope you guys did too. Not sure how many of you out there are deer hunters. Even if you weren't, I hope you found some entertainment value and hope you found some information in that segment too. I learned some things about Minnesota deer hunting, just kind of what the deer hunting landscape is like, what makes a place a good deer hunting, you know, state, habitat, things like that. So thanks again to Tony for the idea. Thanks again to Tony for talking to me. And look for that story soon on StarTribune.com and in your print product. Let us finish now with the cooler. Stephon Diggs has worn out another welcome. Second time in his career that he's been traded from Buffalo to Houston, Buffalo packaging him with a couple of late round picks, sending him to Houston for a second round pick in this draft. You'll remember 4 years ago, the Vikings did the same thing, although they got a first round pick for Stephon Diggs. He played 5 years in Minnesota, 4 years in Buffalo. He gets disenchanted with things. He starts doing these cryptic social media posts, things like that. The end in Buffalo felt very familiar if you followed the end in Minnesota. Like I said, second straight time he's been traded from a very good team. The Vikings in 2019 were a playoff team. They made the playoffs. They won a playoff game that year. They were coming off the best season of the Mike Zimmer, Kirk Cousins marriage that eventually broke up. Buffalo won the division last year. 11-6 team. They've been a division winner the entirety, I believe, of Diggs' time there. So they haven't gotten over the hump, haven't been able to get to the Super Bowl, but he was a very good, very productive player. Same with Minnesota. Something happens where it becomes untenable. He wants out. The team gets to a breaking point where they're like, you know what? If this player doesn't want to be here as good as he is, we need to move on. The Vikings did so well with that decision, right? They traded him for the first round pick that became Justin Jefferson. Not saying the Bills are going to do that, but there is a Minnesota angle to this trade. The second round pick that Houston is sending to Buffalo in the swap for Stephon Diggs is the Vikings' second round pick. It is that number 42 overall pick because the Vikings made that trade with Houston earlier this year to move up into the first round, get to that number 23 pick, trading this year's second, next year's second to get that pick. That becomes now the Bills' pick. So will they Will they, just like the Vikings did, you know, 4 years ago, find that next generation wide receiver? There's supposed to be a lot of great receivers in this year's draft. It would be very interesting if they pick a receiver just like the Vikings did after the Diggs trade 4 years ago. That will do it for me today. Like I said, Twins opener today. Expecting to talk to Phil Miller, Twins beat writer for Friday's show, so stick around for that on tomorrow's show. Until then, I am Michael Rand, back at it again tomorrow.